Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Aleph. Following Shlomo's encounter with Malkat Sheva in the last Perek, we're told of three gross violations of Mitzvot HaMelech, of the commandments specifically to the king, that Shlomo perpetrated during his reign. Two of which are found at the end of Perek Yud, that we discussed in the last shiur, and the third of which is found in the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, the Perek that we're learning today. In Psukim Aleph to Yud, we're told about Shlomo's abundance of wives. He had 1,000 total wives, which was an explicit violation of the command to the king in Devarim Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin, in which we're told, "Velo yarbelo nashim, velo yasor levavo." He shall not have too many wives, so that his heart does not go astray. In Pasuk Dalid, we're told that the consequence of this last particular violation of having too many wives was Vayihi le'eitz ignat Shlomo, nashav hatu et levavo acharei Elohim achirim. In Shlomo's old age, his wives strayed his heart after Avodah Zarah, after idolatry. We're then told that he worshipped foreign gods, did evil in the eyes of Hashem, and built bamot, high places, for these Avodah Zarah gods, for these idolatrous gods, and sacrificed to them. How could Shlomo, the king who built the Beit HaMikdash for Hashem, whose goal was to publicize the name of Hashem throughout the entire known world, have stooped so low as to worship Avodah Zarah? It seems unbelievable. There are two opinions found in Chazal regarding how to interpret this pasuk. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, tells us that the reason why Shlomo violated the mitzvah lo ta'aseh for kings, which is told to us explicitly in Devarim Perek Yud Zayin, is because he claimed that their rationales did not apply to him. He believed that even if he had a lot of wives, his heart would never stray from Hashem. And therefore, he reasoned that he was allowed to have an abundance of everything, of wives, of money, of horses, because his heart would never stray from Hashem, and therefore the mitzvah did not apply to him. However, in the end, unfortunately, it was these very violations that led his heart astray. And so according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the reason why Shlomo stooped so low as to worship Avodah Zarah in the end was because of all of his excesses, especially his excess of wives from nations that worshipped Avodah Zarah and whom he allowed to worship their Avodah Zarah even after marrying him. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Vav Amud Bet, gives us a different reason, as to, you know, a different way to interpret the pasuk. And the Gemara says there that Shlomo did not actually sin. He just was not as great as David HaMelech. Since he really should have gotten rid of his wives who were bad influences on him, but he didn't, the Navi wrote about him as if it was he himself who sinned, when in actuality it was his wives who sinned by worshipping their own Avodah Zarah. But because it was his fault that he was still married to them, Yirmiyahu wrote it as if he was the one worshipping Avodah Zarah. However, it was really his wives worshipping Avodah Zarah, and their worship was attributed to him because he should have taken responsibility to get rid of these wives. So according to this Gemara, Shlomo didn't actually stoop so low as to worship Avodah Zarah. It's just written as if he did, since he didn't rid himself of his wives who were worshipping Avodah Zarah. The Ralbag points out that this approach seems to be supported by the text itself, as it's written in Pasuk Dalet, "Velo haya levavo shalim im Hashem elokav kilvav David aviv," and his heart was not complete with Hashem like the heart of David his father. Had Shlomo himself actually worshipped Avodah Zarah, he wouldn't have been described as merely having an incomplete heart with Hashem. Rather, he should have been described like all the future kings who worshipped Avodah Zarah, with Vayas Hara Be'enei Hashem, and he did bad, evil in the eyes of Hashem. The fact that he's only described as not being as complete with Hashem as David implies that he didn't really worship Avodah Zarah fully, like all these other kings who are described as doing evil, but rather he just wasn't as great as David in that he allowed it to happen in his kingdom, in his very palace. Further, in Pasul Chet, it's his wives who are described as worshipping Avodah Zarah. We're told, "V'chein asa l'chol nashav hanachriot, maktirot u'mizbachot le'elohehen." And so he did, meaning Shlomo did, for all of his foreign wives, who used to sacrifice ketoret, incense, and other sacrifices to their gods. Now, it does say in Pasuk Zayin that Shlomo built bamot for the various idolatrous god, gods, and the Ralbag explains that perhaps this building attribution of the Bamot can be understood similarly to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, which was also attributed to Shlomo, not because he built it himself, but rather because others built it under his auspices. Perhaps so too with these Bamot, with these high places on which sacrifices were brought to Avodah Zarah, it's not that he actually built them himself, but rather his wives built them on his watch. Now, this is set up in very stark contrast to the way that Shlomo was described in the beginning of Sefer Melachim. In Perek Gimel, we're told, Vayahav Shlomo et, right after his marriage to Bat Paro, we're told that Shlomo loved, and we expect the pasuk to continue with the name of his new wife, but instead we're told, Vayahav Shlomo et Hashem. And we see from there that his love for Hashem trumped the love for his foreign wife. By the end of his malchut, unfortunately, it seems that things have reversed themselves. Now, Shlomo's love of his foreign wives seems to have trumped his love of Hashem. Shlomo's punishment for this was twofold. First, we're told that Hashem sent three satanim to rile up his kingdom. The first was Hadad Ha'edomi, the king of Aram. The second was Razon ben Eliada, who had escaped from Hadad Ezer, the king of Tzova. And the final one was Shishak Melech Mitzrayim, who became king of Mitzrayim after Shlomo's own father-in-law, Paro, died. But this new king did not seem to like Shlomo very much, as he harbored two of Shlomo's enemies, Hadad Ha'edomi, and, as we'll learn soon, Yeravam ben Nevat. Even more significantly, Hashem tore his malchut away from him as punishment, but only for 10 of the Shvatim. Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin would remain under his dynasty's rule, out of respect for Hashem's promise to David HaMelech that his dynasty would last forever. We're told that the man who would soon become king of the other 10 Shvatim was named Yeravam ben Nevat. Who was Yeravam ben Nevat, and why was he specifically chosen to start a new dynasty in Am Yisrael from all other potential candidates? In Psukim Chafav through Chafchet in this perek, we're told three things about Yeravam ben Nevat. The first thing we're told is that he was from Shevet Ephraim. This is significant because we know that among the Shvatim, there were two brothers who were specifically destined for kingship. Yehuda, as Yaakov blessed him at the end of his life, Lo Yasor Shevet Miyehuda, the scepter shall not stray from Shevet Yehuda. And Yosef. We know that Yosef was Mishneh Lamelech, he was second to the king in Mitzrayim. And Yaakov blessed him, and when he blessed him at the end of his life, he hinted to Melucha at least twice. He describes him as Ro'eh Even Yisrael, as a shepherd, and we know that shepherds are leaders of the stone of Israel, and as Nazir Echav, which the Rashbam translates as Melech Al Echav, as a king over his brothers. From among Yosef's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, we know that Ephraim was the leader of the two, despite his being the younger one, as demonstrated by Yaakov switching his hands when Yosef brought them to him to receive a bracha, so that he could put his right hand upon Ephraim's head, who was standing on his left. Even though Manasseh was the Bechor, Yosef had put Manasseh to Yaakov's right so that he could bless him with his right hand, but Yaakov switched his hands so that he can give the primary bracha to Ephraim. And therefore it makes sense that when choosing a king from among the other 10 Shvatim, a man from specifically Shevet Ephraim was chosen. The second thing we're told about Yeravam ben Nevat in these psukim is that he was a gibor chayil. Now this phrase is usually used in the military context that they are a strong soldier, but Yeravam is actually never described as a warrior, and we know that Shlomo's kingdom was a peaceful one. So perhaps this phrase is better understood from the context in which it's used in Eshet Chayil, right? Eshet Chayil we usually translate as woman of valor. And we know that a woman of valor was definitely not a warrior since women did not fight in wars in ancient times. And so the term Chayil in the phrase Eshet Chayil generally is understood to connote strength in the sense of leadership, a person who takes action, a person who displays initiative. And that is certainly how the Eshet Chayil is described in Mishlei Perek Lamed Aleph, in the song that we sing every Friday night. And so perhaps we can say the same thing about Yeravam, that he's described as a gibor chayil because he was a leader. He took initiative. In fact, we're told that Shlomo noticed that Yeravam was a doer, and so he appointed him as a tax collector for Beit Yosef. The third thing we're told about Ephraim is that he rebelled against Shlomo when the latter had used the people's tax money and labor to build up the Milo when constructing Bat Paro's palace. and in so doing, he closed up the opening of Ir David, impeding the people's access to either his court, according to the Mitzvah David, or to the Beit HaMikdash, according to Rashi. Yerubbaal likely viewed this as cause for rebellion, because as we discussed in Perek Tet, Shlomo was preventing the people's access to two things that Yerubbaal felt were rightfully theirs: judicial access to the king and spiritual access to the Beit HaMikdash and to Hashem himself. Yerubbaal must have felt strongly that taking this land for royal purposes was essentially stealing from the people and impeding them from accessing their rights. After Yerubbaal protested, Shlomo attempted to kill Yerubbaal. So Yerubbaal escaped to Mitzrayim, where Shishak Melech Mitzrayim provided him with protection. This is the same Shishak Melech Mitzrayim mentioned earlier in the Perek who protected Hadad Ha'edomi, who was another enemy sent by Hashem to rise up against Shlomo. Apparently, unlike Bat Paro's father, who was Shlomo's own father-in-law, this new king of Mitzrayim, whose name was Shishak, did not feel any fondness towards Shlomo. In fact, we're going to see later that this same king becomes an enemy of Bnei Israel during Shlomo's son's time. This storyline is actually very familiar to us, as the same thing happened in Mitzrayim to Bnei Israel. At first, Paro loved Yosef, invited his family to live in Mitzrayim as his guests, but then suddenly, Vayakam Melech Hadash Asher Lo Yada Et Yosef. A new king arose who did not know Yosef and hated his family and sought to kill them out. It seems that history is repeating itself. Paro loved Shlomo, gave him his daughter in marriage, and now the very next king, it's almost like Vayakam Melech Hadash, Shishak Melech Mitzrayim, is acting like the new king at the time of the Shibud, Asher Lo Yada Et Yosef, who pretended he didn't know Shlomo, who hated Bnei Israel and didn't want to have anything to do with them. According to the Radak, this sudden change in Shlomo's relationship with the king of Mitzrayim can actually be viewed as a mida keneged mida, as a measure-for-measure punishment. It was mainly due to Shlomo's relationship with Mitzrayim in the first place that he was led astray from mitzvot Hashem, from fulfilling Hashem's will. He married Bat Paro when he shouldn't have. He had too many horses that he bought from Mitzrayim when he shouldn't have. And these things are what led him astray. And so it is the king of Mitzrayim who ultimately protects Shlomo's opponent, and in so doing paves the way for this opponent's success in tearing apart Shlomo's dynasty. On his way to Mitzrayim, Yerubbaal was approached by a Navi named Achia Hashiloni. And when Achia Hashiloni approached Yerubbaal, he tore his new cloak into 12 pieces and gave Yerubbaal 10 of them, symbolizing the 10 Shvatim over which he will reign in the near future. Why did Achia Hashiloni choose this specific action to tell Yerubbaal his nevuah? What is the symbolism of tearing a cloak specifically? Tearing one cloak is usually symbolic of avelut, the mourning of a loss. We know that Reuven tore his cloak when he returned to the pit where he had left Yosef, and he did not find Yosef there. Kalev and Yehoshua tore their cloaks in response to the Meraglim's, the spies' negative report. We know that Mordechai tore his cloak when he heard about Haman's genocidal plan, etc. In this case, tearing the cloak symbolized that Shlomo would soon experience a major loss. In fact, the Hebrew word for cloak in the Pasuk is salma, which is spelled sin lamed mem he, which with different nekudot could also spell out the name Shlomo, shin lamed mem he. We can understand the salma then as a wordplay on Shlomo's name itself, so that the tearing of the salma represents that Shlomo's kingdom will be torn to pieces, and 10 of those pieces, so to speak, will be given to Yerubbaal. This parak ends with Shlomo's death, succeeded by his son Rechavam's becoming king. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishma Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.